From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. Each week, I look at the literature coming out that we're covering on ACC.org, and I try to pick articles that I think are interesting for the practice of cardiovascular medicine. A couple of weeks ago, we had a mini-symposium on aortic valve disease, and I guess I'm going to say this is a second mini-course on this topic. There's so much happening in the area of TAVR that it's almost hard to keep up. And I thought there were a couple of articles this week that really illustrate some of these areas of scientific advancement. Now, it's interesting, when I talk to some of my interventional colleagues, some of them like to perform TAVR in a hybrid OR with the patient completely asleep, controlled environment. On the other hand, I have occasionally run into some colleagues on the interventional side who say, wait a minute, I just do this in the cath lab with conscious sedation, not many people in the room, and what's the big deal? So I think this is an interesting dilemma, and it has reference to how we approach this thing. Obviously, the heart team concept has taken hold. We generally believe that having cardiologists and cardiac surgeons together leads to both better decision-making and probably better periprocedural outcomes. But the type of anesthesia, the type of setting remains a very interesting area for debate. So in this week's Eagle's Eye View, I'm going to cover two articles. The first one is on this topic, and it's a paper in JACC Intervention looking at the conscious sedation versus general anesthesia in TAVR. And it examines the experience in the German aortic valve registry. So the investigators looked at over 16,000 patients who were in the registry enrolled between 2011 and 2014. And they used propensity matching analysis to evaluate for selection bias. And the endpoints of interest were 30-day and one-year mortality. And they were looking at the association between local anesthesia or conscious sedation versus general anesthesia and the hazard ratios related to outcomes. So interestingly, local anesthesia or conscious sedation was used in half the patients. And this was generally associated with lower rates of low output syndrome, respiratory failure, delirium, CPR, and death. There was no difference in paravalvular leakage between patients having local versus general anesthesia. The risk of prolonged ICU stay was higher with general anesthesia versus the local anesthesia or conscious sedation. 30-day mortality was lower as well, 3.5% versus 4.9%, and with matching this was preserved. There was no difference in the one-year mortality, both around 16.5%. So the authors concluded that the use of local anesthesia or conscious sedation in TAVR is safe and, in fact, might be associated with fewer post-procedural complications and maybe a lower mortality. Clearly, the interesting trade-off here is general anesthetics are negative inotropes. So if the ventricle is in any way injured during the TAVR procedure itself, it's conceivable that the general anesthetic could make that even worse. Obviously, spending time recovering from a general anesthetic on event, particularly if you're an elderly patient with comorbidities, might also be associated with respiratory complications. Having said that, I think it's pretty clear that you can't use a registry study to make firm conclusions about how we use anesthesia in this setting. Even though I try to measure for potential referral biases, you have to believe that there may be uncontrolled biases where patients who are particularly difficult to deal with, perhaps, were getting general anesthetic. But I think the registry study does say to us, if we find patients in our practice who appear to be good candidates for local anesthesia, who maybe can have conscious sedation and avoid general anesthesia, it certainly looks to be safe. And the procedural complications seem to be similar. So having our patients with conscious sedation not deeply asleep doesn't appear to compromise our ability to perform the procedure effectively. There probably will never be a randomized trial of this because I think everyone will move toward the least invasive options here as we get better and better in this space. Now, the second article, I think, is also really important. You know, we use things like the STS risk model and other models to try to estimate a patient's risk having either surgical valve replacement or TAVR. And we're doing these procedures on patients who are quite elderly. And one of the questions that comes up a lot is, how do we predict better who really is going to benefit with both survival and functional quality of life? So this was a paper just published looking at the inclusion of functional status measures in adjusting for risk and 30-day mortality after TAVR. So the authors used data from the Thoracic Surgeons American College of Cardiology TVT registry from June of 2013 to May of 2016. They developed a hierarchical logistic regression model and validated this internally for 30-day mortality. And they included in this particular article Kansas City cardiomyopathy questionnaires and gait speed to try to get further precision. Over 21,000 patients were in the evaluation. The 30-day mortality is about what we expect, around 4.5%. Obviously, there are several clinical factors that are associated with bad outcomes. These include older age, lower body weight, worse pre-procedural renal function, peripheral arterial disease, prior MI, left main coronary disease, tricuspid valve regurgitation, non-femoral access. And then there were functional factors, so a lower Kansas City cardiomyopathy questionnaire score or the inability to complete a 5-minute walk. These were all independent predictors of 30-day mortality after TAVR. The model showed modest discrimination and validation for 30-day and in-hospital outcome. And there was no significant variation across hospital sites in the ability of the model to adjust for risk. So this is an important article, and I think it moves us toward a place where we're going to be able to perhaps be more accurate in our risk prediction. We probably need to include measures of functional health and frailty to better define the population of patients that we think will benefit from TAVR. And particularly as this science gets better, we'll also use these risk models to decide on patients who simply are not going to get a significant benefit in this procedure. With the incidence of calcific aortic valve stenosis in the elderly being as high as it is, it's imperative on us to get better and better in our risk adjustment methods so that we can identify not only those who will benefit, but also those who will not benefit. And I think functional status and frailty, in addition to the markers you and I are kind of used to thinking about, will be some additional metrics that are helpful in this regard. So this is an important area. I enjoyed bringing this to you this week on the Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. These articles can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. You can find us online or anywhere where you get your podcasts. And until next week, have a good day. Thank you.